So we're here with Mohamed Momori, Senior Research Administrator at the Linguistic Data Consortium, and the head of the Arabic Tree Banking Group. How are you doing today?
I'm fine.
Excellent.
Fine. Absolutely fine.
All right. So, yeah, let's start with some of your background. You've actually done teaching and different language teaching as far back as the 1960s. And could you describe your various titles and what sort of work you were involved in? In those different places?
Well, I mean, I'll make that quick because it's a long, long spread of time. I got my PhD in linguistics in 1967 at Cornell. And when I went back to Tunisia, there was no linguistics to talk about. And even in Europe, linguistics was lagging behind. So I started really as a, you know, fighter to get linguistics through. So I spent 28 years in Tunisia before coming to the States. And during those 20 years, I taught English grammar at the beginning, philology, and then very, very soon, fortunately for me, I moved into linguistics. So by the time I left in 1995, I was already a professor of linguistics at the English Department of the Faculty of Letters of the University of Tunis, which is now called the University of Minouba. Mm-hmm. I was also the director of the Bourguiba Institute for about 16 years. The Bourguiba Institute is the largest institute of languages in North Africa at that time and almost in Africa. It was created with funding from the Ford Foundation. And by the way, the Ford Foundation sponsored my graduate studies in the United States, my MA and my PhD. Okay. And basically, I found myself leading the Bourguiba Institute into a new direction because it was just a service division, you know, teaching languages to Tunisians outside of the university structure, and I turned it into a full-fledged School of Translation and Institute of Languages with degrees in modern degrees in languages, and well, I spent 16 years, and during that time also, I was kind of the proselytizer for linguistics in the Arab region. So it was all fun. Mm-hmm. Until a day came when I just came to the United States because my son was here, and I visited the University of Pennsylvania, and I met Professor Daniel Wagner, who was very well known in literacy. We just wanted to meet over lunch to say, you know, see how things were. And we ended up creating a network of, African universities working on literacy. So literacy is connected to my interest because I started in pure linguistics at the beginning and moved more into applied linguistics. And by 1995, I was almost out of the foreign language, you know, teaching first language, second language, the variety of methodologies and all that, and more into thinking about the social impact of, you know, the language and its impact on society. So I was drawn into literacy. And so for 6 years, I worked on the various aspects of literacy. You know, we organized meetings all over the world, and so by the time that second effort, which is really a completely new direction for me, new challenge, working with the top specialists of literacy while, you know, your connection with literacy was reading and, you know, everything I knew about linguistics was not enough to make me, you know, kind of meet the challenge. So it was very important to me because that was one way of regenerating myself and getting into, you know, something new. And one day while I was thinking about, you know, maybe either returning to Tunisia or mostly returning to Tunisia to go back to my university, I got a phone call from Mark Lieberman telling me that they really wanted to see me because there was a, you know, need for somebody who could work on, you know, Arabic and specifically on the Arabic Tree Bank. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't heard about the Arabic Tree Bank before that time. So that's the beginning of my connection with LDC. And so a tree bank is really rich annotation of corpora. And By rich annotation, I mean that, you know, one is going to annotate two layers that are important for the understanding of language, and those two layers are the morphology, which is the forms of the language in tokens or words, whatever you call them, and another, you know, superimposed layer, which is the syntactic layer. And when you put the two of them together, you give the forms meaning, and that meaning is meaning within a context, so it is disambiguated at the same time. And while Penn was known for the biggest tree bank, you know, in the world at that time, and even now, and that's the English tree bank. So the sponsors wanted an Arabic tree bank, and after many discussions, I think I thought that that was the second challenge in my career. And it, I was, you know, kind of interested in it because it kind of took me back to my linguistics. Mm-hmm. Literacy took me to issues of poverty and, you know, illiterate people and, you know, developing world, you know. And basically, that was part of my 6 years with the Graduate School of Education here at Penn. And in 2001, November 2001 exactly, I joined the LDC, and the purpose was to create a tree bank and to start releasing data within 6 months, which was a lot of fun discussions between me and Mark. There was a day when I went back to him when we were still negotiating, saying, well, this is a project that's bound to fail because, you know, it seems impossible. And we agreed that we will take it a step at a time. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. So it was a huge learning curve for me. And not only that, but also my learning curve, with all the help that Anne Bees, who was the first person who worked with me, with all her experience in English tree banking, we still had to face a language that is extremely rich in its grammar and in its morphology. And not only face it, but also face some dichotomous form between the traditional ways of dealing with it and, you know, what, let's say, modern linguistics or the teaching of Arabic outside of the, you know, for non-Arabic speakers had to deal with it. So basically, so to just evaluate, give an evaluation of the tree bank for the 20th anniversary of the LDC, I can say, as I said, that that's probably one of the biggest major achievement. But it's an achievement that came at a cost because our speed at that, you know, at the beginning was about probably 100,000 words per year. Our annotation moved very slowly in terms of guidelines that were appropriate and that dealt, you know, successfully and in a satisfactory way with the realities of corpus-based, you know, language. Corpus-based language is very different from what, let's say, grammar and grammar books describe in languages seen by their authors through their experience. I mean, you get to see how people use the language, and the rules, the traditional rules of grammar by themselves do not necessarily cover what a corpus is going to show you. Major thing in the second 5 years of the Arabic tree bank was that the sponsors gave us the time to go back and review all the first, you know, parts of the tree bank. We were able to go back to about 500,000 words and update them, upgrade them, increase the consistency in them, and that made our work better. And at the same time, that prepared us for the next challenges that came. The next challenges came with a third, you know, DARPA project that required or that wanted to have tree banks, and that's the present one. So the focus moved from modern standard Arabic to dialectal Arabic. We were able to lobby, kind of negotiate, you know, a dialect that's known, you know, throughout the world by all Arabs, and that's Egyptian Arabic. So that's our third challenge. But that challenge is less important and less significant because the focus of difficulty remained on the morphology, but the syntax, you know, presented less or is presenting less problems.
Right.
When we moved into the dialect, the problem shifted because all of a sudden what we needed is people who really had perfect native knowledge of the dialect. So all of a sudden we needed to also get the same type of people, which means people who, you know, spoke perfect Egyptian, but also people who had a lot of linguistics. And, you know, here, linguistics that's based mostly on phonology and morphology, mm-hmm. not necessarily syntax. And we have right now 13 annotators who are helping us, you know, with the 3 or 4 or 5 years, you know, of this project on the, you know, developing an Egyptian Arabic, you know, tree bank. Mm-hmm. So gives you now a complete idea of the volume of the challenges. We are leading the way in a domain that is extremely difficult in itself, costly in terms of time and in terms of training, but at the same time, very, very important for machine translation and a variety of other natural language processing, you know, ends. Of course, that's, I think, what the LDC, you know, is known for.
Mm-hmm. You've also led 2 U.S. Department of Education projects. So one for an Arabic reading tool and for language learning, and the other for dialectal Arabic dictionaries.
Okay.
Can you go?
Well, I think that question is an important one for me because it connects to my kind of entry or my first contact with the LDC. And from the very beginning, I think in my first discussions with Mark Lieberman and Christopher Sieri, before I even, you know, was recruited to come and join the group, I did express my personal interest in work that would relate to education, work that would have its impact on the world of education, and my own interest in that is, in a way, to continue while coming back to what looks like computational linguistics or, you know, the connection between computers and language. I thought that I would not be necessarily satisfied with just doing the annotation on the Arabic tree bank. It only took me 2 to 3 years to understand that there were benefits that could go from what I learned doing the tree bank to give it back to the university, which is our background, you know, and to see how those technologies that we are using for computer scientists could also be of help for language teaching and a variety of other applied things. In a strange way, that also connected to my views on literacy. The problems of literacy and illiteracy in the Arabic region is, in my view, and very few others have ever espoused that view because it's a difficult one, you know, for non-linguists to really accept, come from the fact that people, when they read Arabic, read it without the vocalization. And the vocalization carries the lexicon, and some of it carries the syntax. So when that thing happens, it's clear that Arabic teaching is going to be more difficult and that people are going to, you know, lose if they finish high school, if they get all the way to high school, you know, it's something that you are not going to keep. You may lose some of it and fall back into semi-illiteracy. Mm-hmm. I said this once at the World Bank, and it took them a long, long time to even understand what I was saying. And when they did, they invited me to kind of express that opinion in front of a group of ministers of education. And it was a big gathering of the, you know, of the World Bank in Morocco. And I did, but again, it's not something that catches very quickly. So I wrote, you know, with a team, we wrote the first grant proposal in which we took the whole series that was used by most universities here. It's called Al-Kitab, and it's three volumes of Arabic, of course, and vocalized, which means without the vowels.
Right.
And we applied exactly the same tools that we applied for the tree bank, namely using the morphological analyzer to give us the diacritics. We also used a variety of other things, by the way, because once my eyes were open to natural language processing technologies, not only did we use that in order to diacritize the whole three volumes, but at the same time I used the technology of text-to-speech, which is another technology of recognition. And this is something I saw in Egypt from a group called RDI. And we acquired that technology from them. And all of a sudden, we had not only the possibility to give people a text that's totally vocalized when required and when at request, because we are not going to change the Arab world. They will keep using non-vocalized text. Mm-hmm. But our, you know, learners could push a button and then the text is immediately vocalized, and then they could push the same button and take the vocalization to see whether they could read it without the need to have vocalization. Because that's what happens in reality. People need to know the Arabic grammar in order to read, and not read in order to get to the Arabic, to the grammar, as for English or most other languages, mm-hmm. if not all other languages. So among the other things we added to this kit that is represents enhancement reading tools or facilitation reading tools, we added, apart from therefore the morphology, we added the possibility to take any word and immediately have its complete morphological analysis in a window on the side. It's also an access to a dictionary, an electronic dictionary. If you don't know the word, then the English gloss would come. Arabic dictionaries are known to be extremely difficult to use because people have to know a root system in order to kind of navigate through them, and very few of them are alphabetical. So that it was that issue which was taken care of, mm-hmm. also turning the whole thing into an electronic, you know, showing where you highlight a word and the dictionary works. Then we added also a concordancer, which took all the specific, you know, words of the whole series and then found all their frequencies, found exactly where they were in the three volumes, and a student will click on a word and the concordancer will bring all the occurrences of that word in all three volumes, but it will also bring enough context so that people could look and see whether the word had the same meaning, whether the meaning changed because of the use. Mm-hmm. And that's also something that has never been used in really in the classroom. So all this needed classrooms, and my good contacts with Professor Roger Allen, who was, you know, the person in charge, so to speak, of all the Arabic teaching, and that allowed me to go in the classrooms and see how the students reacted. Let me give you a full, you know, kind of an interesting story. So I was in a first year Arabic class, and it was the spring semester, so they were beyond the, you know, the alphabet and all that. And I introduced myself, and then I asked the teacher to just, you know, sit down. And I had looked before to see what they were doing. So I looked at their books, and the text that they had was all full of scribbles, because they would scribble the gloss for every single word. So these people are brilliant students. I mean, they were very hardworking students, at least. Let's leave brilliant aside. And they prepared a lot, and it's right there in front of my eyes. And all that was not needed. So what I did is I said, okay, well, let's take a text. And I showed them the text on the, you know, I brought my computer, opened the tool and showed them the text on the screen. And then I said, well, you see, all of you prepared your text. can you read? And so some of them read and they could not deal with the issue of diacritics, you know. And then I pushed the text and I pushed that bullet, you know, that would put all the diacritics. Mm-hmm. And then all of the diacritics showed up. And what happened was about 30 of them just stood up and started clapping hands and say, hey, you know, this is great, you know. So they've been using it ever since. Mm-hmm. Right now, all the, you know, the professors who continued using the tool are using it because now they are convinced that the tool can prepare the students for the classroom. Our aim was never to have a tool that taught, but we wanted a tool that facilitated the process of reading Arabic for learners of Arabic outside of the classroom. And the professors, the best feedback we got from them is that for the first time in many, many years, for most of them, if not all of them, they have more time to study what the text was all about, mm-hmm. to study the culture of the topics or the problem, and not spend time on teaching them what the diacritics are or teaching them what words meant. It really brings the best out of what we learned here on human language technologies and natural language processing and puts it into the classroom. To my knowledge, that should revolutionize the use of audiovisuals and the use of what's called technologies in foreign language teaching, because for the moment, there is almost no comparison between what NLPs can do and what the other, you know, tools like a lab, like, you know, recording and, you know, all that can do. Mm-hmm. So that's the experience of, you know, that tool.
Excellent. We're running a little bit low on time, but I want to ask you to briefly explain your Arabic heritage corpus, and then we'll close with some closing thoughts.
So Fairuz was something that was really started in my first discussion with Mark Lieberman. I think he was interested in, I don't even know, you know, I think it was a joint interest into this idea of a language that has not changed for 15 years, but that must have changed because we don't believe that languages, I believe that languages change continuously. Mm-hmm. And as linguists, we agreed on that. But nobody has really looked at the full 15 centuries of the Arabic language. To put it kind of very briefly, that project is to take, therefore, those 15 centuries and to create a corpus that we later on called the Arabic Heritage Language Corpus. Why heritage? Well, because it covers all the culture. It covers all the aspects of Arabic as used all the way from the birth of Islam in the 6th, 7th century to today. It covers a part that we know very well and that we deal with, and that's, you know, contemporary Arabic. So that'll be one end. And we started Fairuz by saying, okay, so what else do we need from the very beginning of when Arabic became to be the language that we know, which is the language of Islam and of a certain, you know, community. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we started with, you know, what's called the pre-Islamic poetry. And we started going up across the ages, getting the books that need to be there, identifying them, making sure that they were keyboarded in Lebanon, because we needed to deal with this corpus the same way we deal with any other corpus, which is safeguard, you know, IPR issues. So what's Fairuz? So Fairuz is going to be that same idea that we used for the books that I explained a moment ago. You make a corpus, you include a certain amount of authors, and you include them in such a way that they are representative of their centuries. You include them also in such a way that there is some kind of a weighted set volumes between them and who else is in that period, so that we do not have one author kind of getting more representativity. Mm-hmm. We would like the language to be balanced in such a way that moving from one century to another, you see what the century is by what's reflected in it, by what we included there. So we did that. And now we are close to putting all our, you know, these resources into a database. So what kind of a database is it going to be? Well, it's going to be a database that can, you know, allow searches done on not only words, but also on language. It can also be search on authors. It can be search on genres and all that. Mm-hmm. Our own interest is going to be on taking all the language from the pre-Islamic to today and making it go through, you know, a morphological analyzer and the stemma, which will give us the principles or the words of a big, huge dictionary. Mm-hmm. This dictionary, therefore, is going to be a historical dictionary of the Arabic language.
Right.
At the same time, it's going to show the words in also, you know, with their frequencies. Mm-hmm. So there will be frequencies of each word, and those frequencies will be connected to links that will take you to every single occurrence within the text out of which they were taken. So this is really a huge, you know, database. And the only thing that we are trying to get close to, and I don't even know whether in the final end, you know, we are using the same technology or not. Maybe our technology is much more modern. And this project, this is a project that was done at Leeds, and it's called the Co-Build. And that project was done on the English language, used approximately many of these ideas, even though they didn't call it heritage, but they did review English and all the Englishes. And they created, therefore, that dictionary. And I think Arabic needs, you know, that kind of a very, very important information about pinning down occurrences of a word across the 15 centuries, which means diachronically, and therefore looking at the semantic differentiation, how the word meaning changed from one occurrence to the other, from one century to the other, from one author to the other. So that's what Fairuz would do. As you see, I know the beginning, I don't know what the end is, you know, and it has been a very fast, you know, this is, I think, my 12th year, if I'm not wrong, by November. And it has been fun. It has been really fun. LDC has, to me, has the feeling of a family. It's that kind of an atmosphere where people are not official. I stopped using a tie ever since 2001. Mm-hmm. You know, it's relaxed. The speed is not, you know, necessarily relax. I mean, the amount of work that we get and, you know, the deadlines and all that are usually, you know, very pressing. But the work I'm doing is interesting and keeps me on my toes, but also it keeps me fascinated and interested. And I think that the day that stops, you probably would not see me here. So for the moment, things are fine. And I'm enjoying what I'm doing and enjoying LDC and and also, I see that LDC itself is also, you know, evolving. So hopefully it will go in the direction where it will always keep, you know, the contact with the university there. That's an important side because that brings the real research. That brings the interest not only in just providing an annotation and, you know, resources for people who are going to use them, but also keeps us thinking about what's the future of those resources. How can we make more resources? How can we get into, you know, new territories and new, you know, levels of work on language that would really be, you know, kind of more promising for the users, those who do natural language processing and human technologies. So that's what they have to tell you.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for sitting down with us.